The opposition between these two, that, for example, when your heart wants something, exactly that thing is not true.
The heart and the mind.
Yeah, exactly. But today, I'm going to just tell you that this is not about opposition.
Mm-hmm.
It's about distinction between two of these things.
Now, well, I would say it's about opposition.
Okay.
Yes,
I do not agree with you. Because it's not like that, you know. When you say opposition, it has a really strong vibe. You know?
Okay, Bita, let me clarify it from the very beginning.
Okay.
So we have this story which has got a very long history, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? But ever since human beings have been brought into this world, there was this war between the heart and the mind.
Yeah.
So there are things your heart can see, but your mind cannot.
And vice versa.
And vice versa, of course. So there is this fight that you have to overcome it in yourself.
Exactly.
When you are alone, sitting by yourself and having some discussion with your own self,
mm-hmm.
talking about something which is in favor of your heart,
yeah.
then your mind would come in the middle and be the one who's going to be the opposite side.
Exactly.
And the reverse, exactly. So there are some times that your mind is telling you something, but your heart does not actually...
I do agree with this part, but the thing is, you know, you shouldn't choose one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make a balance between two.
Now, with this areas. One, I yeah. agree.
Okay, thank you.
Rita, when you are stuck between these two, between your heart and between your mind.
You know, I don't want to talk like I'm a cliche or an ideal person.
Yeah.
I want to be myself. Actually, I think that there are, for example, different topics in this world, and you have to just recognize them and yeah. distinguish them. So
this is the difficult part. How
yeah.
to distinguish, how to
think,
make a balance.
It comes from experience. You have to experience
yeah,
other things. And I think one important aspect of these... Actually, topic is about our communication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you are in contact with other people, always there are some boundaries, there are some limitations that your mind is just trying to tell you
exactly.
that you have to consider them.
It's a reminder,
but, yeah,
always telling you
exactly
what to do,
what not to do. All the people around the world just
yeah.
want to see other people as ideal as they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're searching for something like Medine Fazile or, you know, an
utopia.
Ideal thing. Because of that, I think our heart, despite seeing all the discrimination, corruption,
mm-hmm.
every bad thing in this world, they just want to consider it as something that is not really in this world, you know?
So you mean,
as
far as
more.
I got what you say that there are different things in this world. Some of them are ideal, and our mind is trying to tell us about the ideal.
No, our heart is trying to tell us about the ideal.
Really?
You know,
I thought the
yeah.
otherwise. It's
no,
always the mind
all.
That is telling
Actually,
us about the
our
ideal.
Our heart, you know, deep in our heart and our soul, we're searching for something which is ideal.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, somewhere deep in your brain, you know that being ideal, being perfect, you know, having no defect or something like that is impossible.
Yes.
It's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot be perfect because you're human and humanist were. And because of that, I'm telling you that we are not going to accept everything about this world.
Mm-hmm.
Just we're going to see everything we want to see. And this is about heart, not mind.
Well, I should disagree.
Why?
Again. This
Why?
Time I will disagree because it's always the mind that is taking us to the ideal. You know, the heart is free as a bird. So it would never tell you, you
Maybe
have to
your
be like...
Maybe your heart is free. You know what I'm telling you?
Mm-hmm.
You're a kind of a special individual in this world, and you have your own characteristic, person, and something.
No,
but
trust me. It's this way for everyone.
No, not
All
me.
The people
not
that
me.
Okay, you are the exception.
Yeah.
See, exceptions do not break the rule.
I do
well,
agree
for
that.
All the people all around the world, let's say just it's in my personal opinion.
Yeah.
I would say that it's the mind that tells us that you should be perfect, you should be this or that. But then the heart is just like your sibling, is your partner in crime. It would take you wherever your mind does not really want you to go.
I do agree with what you're saying, but I think there is a misconception, a misunderstanding here.
Yes.
You know what? I'm telling you that the power of seeing exists both in heart and mind.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, heart just resists accepting the things that doesn't want to accept, you know?
Oh my God, it's the mind that is always resisting everything.
And,
why are you telling
me like that? It's like we're talking about something which is kind of different, you know, I don't know, your mindset or something like that.
Of course, but, we're two different human beings.
Yeah, exactly.
But before we get into that, let's go for a break. What do you say?
I do agree with that one. After a break, we're going to continue our conversation.
Of course, let's take a sip of water and go for a short break. We'll be back in no time, so stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
We're talking about the long topic.
History
yes.
of mind.
And
heart.
The heart. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
The debate. The struggle, the fight.
You know, we're struggling and fighting about the point that, we're going to be ideal and we want these, but which part of us want exactly these parts? You know, it is our heart that persuades us to do these or our mind.
Yeah.
You are telling me that our mind is kind of more limited.
You see, the mind is the ruler. The mind is the ruler, like you're in a school. He
so
or
what
she
is, the,
is
heart?
The one who's telling
what is the heart if the mind
the
is the ruler?
The heart is the
soldier.
No. The heart is the one that I told you, always slipping away, always trying to fly like a bird, and you cannot put it in a cage.
Mm-hmm.
Putting it in a prison is going to hurt it, and then you would feel like broken. I don't know if you have ever recognized that. The logical people, those people who always side with their brain, they have some very tragic stories to tell.
Not all of them.
Most of them, let's say.
Okay, I do agree with that one. But it's not like you're telling that heart is something that bad that will be free.
I'm siding with heart.
I'm going to do whatever I want to do and I don't care about what your mind telling me.
Yeah.
It's not like that, actually. I mean, for example, sometimes you have to take risks.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be passionate about something.
Yeah.
And it's not about mind. It's about heart. This is what heart sees in this life. You know, when you are really passionate about one thing, I don't mean, you know, just finding that thing is true or not. No. The thing I'm trying to tell you is that sometimes you want to do something and this passion, this favor is just coming from your heart.
This feeling, this
fondness. Yeah, exactly. And I think the depth of our soul is really connected to our heart. And our heart is connected to our brain. You know, you cannot just completely distinguish them and tell me that, okay, our heart is like a bird that wants to fly. No. You know, maybe even our mind sometimes deep in his or her heart want to be a bird to that. A bird.
You said heart deep in her heart.
Yeah, exactly.
See, we come to that.
So we cannot distinguish them. Do you agree with that part?
Yes, there is a difference between both of them, between the heart and the mind.
Exactly.
So let's come down from utopia and talk about real human beings and what happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
See, there is this heart and there is this mind.
Exactly.
We are put in the middle of this fight. So we are a kind of a tore apart in this battlefield. The heart is taking us somewhere and the mind is taking us completely the other way.
Okay.
So the thing in here is that sometimes in some situations, there's some certain things that the mind is trying to tell us, but the heart ignored to understand because it has been in a very special condition, like a kind of a patient who's going through a kind of sickness, and then they cannot have some special feelings. For example, when someone is madly in love with another person, their heart is going to get blind.
Exactly.
They cannot see, they cannot hear, they cannot use their logic, anything. It's only the heart that is taking them toward a direction that might not be very much having a happy ending. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. You know, in my life, you know, there is a rule that just tells me that follow your heart, but take your brain with you. At the same time, you know, and also, as Emily says, it's like there is no blessing better than your brain in this world.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you are blessed with brain and other creatures, you know, just don't have these blessings, you have to be different. You have to think different. And if you're gonna just follow your heart, you just you'll act
this
in
is
a way
which is
not appropriate
well, you
for
know,
your
we have,
level of creation.
We have both of them, and we have to make use of them both.
Exactly. It's about balance.
Yeah, exactly.
With me.
Balance and moderation always would do the best in our life.
Exactly. And another thing which I want to tell you is that you have to purify your heart, first of all.
Exactly.
If, you know, your heart is something, some place which is full of sadness, full of sorrow, full of, I don't know, hatred and anything, it's not like you can tell me that it's hard. It's not hard. Heart is pure. And first of all, I think you have to follow your brain in the first place to find the, you know, the best level of your heart.
Yeah.
And then you can follow your heart, your passion, and everything in this life will taste differently.
Well, Bita, you know what? I think we have to come at peace with both of them.
Exactly.
We should come to a point in which the heart and the mind sit together and decide together, hand in hand, not ignoring one of them. Mm-hmm. Living with heart is going to be dangerous. Living with mind alone is going to be so boring.
Exactly.
So we should come to a conclusion that heart and mind are two of the most necessary part of our life.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't ignore one of them.
And also,
we have it in our narrations that logic is the criteria for every single thing.
Yeah.
So we should make use of that. Though the heart is very important and we have to pay some attention to whatever she or he desires.
Exactly. You know, the thing is, both of them are important and you have to make a balance within these two. But you cannot always act as they are both the same.
Mm-hmm.
They are different. And sometimes you have to prefer one to another. And just try to be logical. And brain always shows you which is best for you. But heart is not always the best one.
Yeah, exactly. So we were talking about the fight between the heart and the mind. It's actually it has got a very long history, so we're not going to solve the world's dilemma
and
in just 14
history,
minutes.
There are many artworks and portraying everything about this matter. And even it was one of the main matters in philosophy in literature.
Yeah, exactly. But the main idea and the gist of it is that go for moderation. Make a bridge between both of them and try to find peace between both of them.
Balance is the key.
Yeah, balance is the key point in here. So thank you for listening.
I hope you're enjoying all of this conversation.
Yes, and until another session, we bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
فیلم فیخ از علوم شریفه اسلامی است.
فقه or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of عمل انسان بعد از
Self purification is the most significant fact.
امامت یک اصل زنده است در تاریخ اسلام.
امامت is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. Stay tuned.
اون آقای ادریس حسینی که شیعه نبود.
Idris al-Husseini is a Moroccan scholar who reverted from Sunnism to Shiism. He has a book titled Al-Husayn Made Me Shia. In the preface of the book, he claims that once he was asked about the main reason for his conversion to Shia Islam. He answers, I could neglect so many details in Islam except those related to Karbala tragedy and Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. I couldn't understand why so-called Muslims dared to kill the grandson of Prophet Muhammad in the name of Islam and trample their horses on his body.
میگد این حادثه مرا مسلمان کرد، شیعه کرد.
Idris al-Husseini believes that studying the tragedy of Karbala made him a Shia Muslim. In better words, this scholar was influenced by the school of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam and mourning ceremonies that are held for him. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en/Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye. Thank you.
in the limelight.
The successful efforts of China and India in launching nasal vaccines is a step forward toward immunization against different cases of illnesses. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Nature, two needle-free COVID-19 vaccines that are delivered through the nose or mouth have been approved for use in China and India. China's new vaccine, announced recently, is inhaled through the nose and mouth as an aerosolized mist, and India's, announced recently, is administered as drops in the nose. These mucosal vaccines target thin mucous membranes that line the nose, mouth, and lungs by prompting immune responses where SARS-CoV-2 first enters the body. Vaccines could, in theory, prevent even mild cases of illness and block transmission to other people, something COVID-19 shots have been unable to do. Vaccines that produce sterilizing immunity would be game-changing for the pandemic. These approvals validate the need for mucosal vaccines, says Marty Moore, co-founder of MISA Vaccines in Redwood City, California, which is developing a COVID-19 immunization that is delivered through the nose. Adding, that's the direction we need to go globally, and the United States needs to do it. The regulatory nods from China and India bring the number of approved COVID-19 mucosal vaccines in the world to 4, including one already approved in the Islamic Republic of Iran and another in Russia. More than 100 mucosal vaccines against the disease are in development globally, and about 20 have reached clinical trials in humans, according to Airfinity, a health analytics company in London. Delivery methods include sprays, drops, aerosols, and pills. China's inhaled vaccine developed by CanSino Biologics in Tianjin contains the same ingredients as the company's COVID-19 shot that is already available in the country. A device called a nebulizer turns the liquid vaccine into an aerosol spray that is inhaled. China's Health Department and National Medical Products Administration approved the vaccine to be used as a booster dose. India's vaccine developed by Bharat Biotech in Hyderabad is approved as a two-dose primary inoculation rather than a booster. Both companies have produced viral vector vaccines that use a harmless adenovirus to deliver SARS-CoV-2 genetic material into host cells. Neither company has published phase 3 clinical trial data, but both say they have completed those studies. Data from a phase 2 trial of CanSino's inhaled vaccine found that when given as a booster, the vaccine raised blood serum antibody levels significantly more than did a boost from an injection. This suggests that the inhaled vaccine will offer protection that is as good as or better than that provided by the shot. Similarly, Bharat compared its intranasal vaccine to Covaxin, a COVID-19 jab available in India, by measuring antibody levels in the blood. The company did not release results of this study but deemed the trial successful. Exactly how successful these vaccines will be is unclear. Expecting a vaccine to stop transmission of a virus or prevent even mild illness, achieving what is called a sterilizing immunity is a high bar. Bharat and CanSino won't know whether their vaccines can achieve this until they have conducted further efficacy studies. According to Nature, scant data are available on the efficacy of two other Mucosal COVID-19 vaccines. Iran approved the COVID-19 vaccine administered as a nasal spray and made by Razi Vaccine and Serum Research Institute in Karaj in October 2021. More than 5,000 doses have been delivered to the public. And Russia's health ministry is reported to have approved an intranasal spray version of Sputnik V, the country's injected COVID-19 vaccine. Mucosal vaccines have been developed for other diseases, including polio, influenza, and cholera. Most of these vaccines are taken orally, and one against flu is administered through the nose. CBS News also reported COVID-19 vaccines today are shots and they have saved millions of lives and continue to offer strong protection against severe illness and death even as more contagious variants of the coronavirus circulate. But shot-free versions are being explored as a strategy to improve protection against infection, with particular interest in nasal vaccines designed to fend off the virus right where it enters the body. Nearly a dozen possible candidates are in various stages of testing globally, and CanSino is one of the two inhaled vaccine candidates being developed, according to the World Health Organization. The advantage with nasal vaccines is that it may get rid of the virus before it has a chance to establish itself in the lungs and replicate, said Dr. Vinita Ball, an immunologist and professor at the Indian Institute of Science Education Research in Pune City. The advantages that vaccines spray through the mouth have depended on the size of individual droplets in the spray. Large droplets would train defenses in the mouth and parts of the throat, while smaller droplets are expected to travel deeper and reach the lungs. It also may be easier to administer a squirt in the nose than a shot, especially in low-income countries, said Dr. Michael Diamond of Washington University in St. Louis, who helped create the vaccine license to Bharat. In October 2021, Russia's health ministry allowed early trials of a nasal form of Sputnik V among 500 volunteers, but the status of those trials and the availability of vaccines remains unclear. Vaccination rates in India have dipped in the past months, with detected cases plateauing. Around 940 million people, or 67% of the population, have received the first two shots, but only 15% of them have received a third booster shot.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle.
Today's lesson, the forbidden salam. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of the forbidden salam in the Islamic teachings and Islamic lifestyle. There are some cases in which it is forbidden or prohibited to perform salam or greetings or saying salam to the others. Why? Because we said that salam is a greeting in which we pray for the others and we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to keep them in peace. The first group for which Allah has said, or in the Islamic text, it is said that you should not say salam to them, is the one who performs illegal actions, who perform non-legalized actions. For example, if Allah has said to not to use alcohol or drink alcohol, if we see a Muslim or a person who drinks alcohol, it is not, you are prohibited to say salam to such a person. For example, if Allah has said that the alcohol and the gambling is haram, and we see someone who is committing such sins, then obviously he is fighting with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Because in the verses and the hadith we have that the person who drinks alcohol, who does gambling, who eats riba, and who is a fasiq. Fasiq means a person, a transgressor. The person who performs a sin and never does tawbah, and he never feels bad about what he has done. So for such people, it is said to not to say salam to them. Why? So that when you do not talk to them, you do not pray for them, you do not say salam to them, they get attentive that these people are not saying salam because of my actions. So he can stop from performing those bad actions, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of forbidden salam. The second place where it is said to not to say salam to some people is where people, when you see people are performing something and it is hard for them to answer, because the answer of salam is wajib, it is obligatory, that when someone says salam, we must answer them in the best way. So in some cases, it is said to not to say salam when you see people. For example, if we see people offering prayers, they are in the state of namaz or salat or prayer. So they're praying. So it is said to not to say salam when you enter the mosque, when you see people there praying. Why? Because it is hard for them to answer. And obviously they're attentive towards the prayer and you get tension away. That's the first place. The second place, for example, if someone is taking a bath, so he's in the bathroom. So why you want to say salam to the person who's inside there? Let them come out. Or maybe they're in the toilet. So, or maybe there is someone who is brushing his teeth, and in that time when we say salam to them, it's very hard for them to answer. And because the answering salam is wajib. So therefore, it is said that you should not say salam to these people. You should wait for such people to finish what they're doing. And after that, you can see them, you can perform the greetings, you can pray for them. And the third category is that those who are out of Islam, because salam is specific for the Muslims, and the ones who are out of the Islam, it is not necessary to say salam to those people. So we should say salam to our Muslim brothers and sisters when we see them. And we should avoid saying salam to those who are non-Muslims, because in some verses or in some narrations it is said that if you say salam to the others who are Ahlul Kitab, for example, the people of book, it means that you're confirming their religion, and that is not the right religion. The religion is Islam, and it is necessary to say Salamun alaykum to the Muslims, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is a part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with Friday prayer leaders from across the country in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on July 27, 2022.
Give people awareness and insight. These things that I have mentioned are also true for the upcoming Muharram sermons, and you should be able to see the results in the following Friday prayers. So, if what you're doing is successful, you should be able to see it in the people coming to the Friday prayers. If you notice that what you're doing was not effective in attracting a larger audience, there is something wrong with what you're doing. Find those flaws and fix them. We cannot say the reason for this lack of attention is that people have lost their beliefs and have become less religious. Some people say such things. It truly seems they are talking without having thought about what they're saying and are suggesting that the people have become less religious. No, that's not the case at all. They're not less religious. Just look at the Ghadir celebrations and the massive gatherings for the ceremonies and speeches during the months of Muharram and Safar. Who are the people who attend these ceremonies? They are our people. Look at the mourning ceremonies, the religious ceremonies, the Arba'in Wuk. Who are these people? These are our people. Our people's religion, their faith, their belief, not only have they not weakened, they have actually become stronger. However, the quality of my sermons or my prayers might not be good enough to attract these faithful people. This should not be mistaken for weakness in the people's beliefs.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Some people easily say these things. For instance, they say that people's beliefs have weakened. No, they have not weakened. I've seen the country before the revolution. Most of you have not. Our people are holding larger religious ceremonies now. They are making much larger financial contributions to the religious seminaries, and they are participating more actively in social and religious services. The people are present on the scene. We are the ones who need to remain on the scene with them. O Allah, by the blessed souls of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi and his progeny, help what we have said and heard to be for you and in your path. Bless us with sincerity and accept it from us. O Allah, help us to practice the things we preach. Unite the pure soul of our magnanimous Imam who opened this path for us and the blessed souls of the dear martyrs who strived and sacrificed their lives on this path with the pure souls of the first martyrs of Islam and the holy Imam. Bless all of us to join them. May Allah's greetings, mercy and blessings be upon you all.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Limelight. These days, the energy crisis in Europe has become the most important topic in Western media. According to The Economist, the European economy is definitely going into recession, and industry is also under heavy pressure. The price of gas and electricity has increased 10 to 20 times, 10 and 20 times respectively. The service sector in Europe is also likely to stagnate in the coming months, and the real estate and transportation sectors will face severe problems as consumers are making themselves ready for a long and cold winter. Experts say concerns about the occurrence of riots, theft and even crime, and suicide in European countries are high due to the increase in the energy prices and soaring inflation. We have taken a look at some of the world media for further details. Please stay with us. The German newspaper Der Spiegel wrote, according to a top European Union official, the European Union is bracing for a recession in the wake of skyrocketing gas prices and soaring inflation, as the coming winter is likely to be one of the worst in history. Paolo Gentiloni, the European Union's Economics Commissioner, recently said the recession cannot be ruled out amid sharp cuts in Russian energy supplies to Europe. Paolo Gentiloni was quoted as saying, "The current inflation will throw our economy into turmoil, and the coming winter could be one of the worst in history." He added, "We're experiencing unprecedented uncertainty." The senior European Union official also hinted at the need for some EU countries to ration gas consumption. He noted, "It depends on what decisions Russian President Vladimir Putin makes and how we ourselves behave. It is already necessary to save energy." Also recently, the president of the European Central Bank, Christine Lagarde, said if gas prices continue to skyrocket, that would be a a recessionary factor for the European countries. Christine Lagarde said the downside scenario for 2023 foresees negative growth in the case of a total shutdown of all Russian gas supplies to Europe and energy rationing in the Eurozone. According to Eurostat data, as prices rise at the highest pace for half a century, Eurozone inflation is poised to be 9.1% in August, up from 8.9% in July. It comes after Russia announced an indefinite shutdown of its main gas pipeline, the Nord Stream pipeline to Europe, that saw a daily flow of 170 million cubic meters of gas supply. Russian President Vladimir Putin said recently that Gazprom could restart gas flows to Europe via the key Nord Stream 1 pipeline if illegal US and European sanctions were eased and Russia received the turbines that it needed. Actuary website covers the same issue from a different angle. New analysis suggests general insurers can expect slower premium growth in Europe over the next 3 years, as rising inflation impacts the ability of policyholders to pay higher prices. The forecast by data and analytics firm Global Data indicate that general insurance claim payouts in Europe will grow by 5.1% in 2022, whereas premiums will increase at a lower rate of 4.9%. A similar trend is expected up to 2025, suggesting a negative impact on the profitability of insurers. This is in stark contrast to what was recorded in 2020, when claim payouts grew by just 1% and the premiums increased by 4.1%. The analysis comes after inflation in Europe jumped to 8.9% in July, which was the highest level seen in the last 25 years. Saurabh Kumar Sahu, senior insurance analyst at Global Data, explained, "This was initially due to the prolonged economic impact of COVID-19, but has been further exacerbated by the Russia-Ukraine conflict and the resulting supply chain disruptions in 2022. Adding, following this, the price for the average claim has increased, impacting most general insurance lines, especially property, motor insurance, and specialty insurance. Rising raw material prices, disruptions in supply and labor shortages are expected to shoot up the average cost of claims for both commercial and household property insurance. As a result, property insurance claims are expected to grow by 6.4% in 2022, with premiums growing by 5.6%. Saurabh Kumar Sahu, a senior insurance analyst at Global Data, said, "Rising inflation and the cost of living crisis will not only lead to higher insurance rates and tougher conditions for the market, but will also push policyholders towards underinsurance and keep general insurers' profitability under pressure." The British newspaper The Guardian has more on this story. The Guardian reports, "According to European Central Bank's policymakers, interest rates across the Eurozone must continue to ratchet upwards to tackle rapidly rising inflation. The European Central Bank's call to prioritise the fight against inflation, with further increases in the cost of borrowing, came after it raised interest rates by an unprecedented 0.75% on Thursday, 8th of September, to 1.25%. The ECB warned that Eurozone inflation was at its highest rate in almost half a century in August, at 9.1%, up from 8.9% in July, and at risk of becoming entrenched. Peter Kazimir, Slovakia's central bank chief, who sits on the European Central Bank's governing body, said, "Inflation remains unacceptably high. The priority now is to continue vigorously the normalization of monetary policy. Peter Casimir's remarks were widely interpreted as a call for further significant increases in borrowing costs, despite the likelihood it will significantly slow the 19-member currency bloc's economic recovery. Echoing his words, the Dutch Central Bank president, Klaas Knot, said slowing growth was a necessary side effect of the fight against inflation. Klaas Knot said, "We expect inflation to keep rising in the coming months, so that means we only have one problem on our plate, inflation." He adds, "That will mean we will have to slow economic growth at least a bit to reduce inflation." European governments feel threatened over a day-by-day worsening situation that would result in mass sufferings this winter. Along with the ongoing Russia-Ukraine conflict, drought and rising temperatures in several parts have also aggravated the crisis in the European continent. Meanwhile, the fear of energy shortage has drawn consumers to wood and caused them to store wood before the winter. In France, for example, with an increase of 28.5% in energy prices, the condition is so bad that people are collecting firewood to use wood-burning fireplaces to brace themselves for the upcoming winter. This has also increased the demand for firewood. In Germany, the year-ahead contract for electricity reached 995 euros per megawatt hour, while the French equivalent surged past 1,100 euros. In Britain, on the other hand, Britain has seen mass strikes during the last weeks in the transport sector, in shipping and postal industries, as workers demanded hikes in wages as they are not able to deal with the rising expenses. A disruptive chain of decrease in supplies that has led to a domino effect in the continent is now setting its feet into other untouched industries.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
After 1 year under the Taliban control, Afghanistan is on the brink of economic collapse. This is according to the latest update by the World Food Programme. The UN body says the economic crisis wiped out jobs, salaries, and livelihoods across Afghanistan, limiting people's purchasing power. The WFP has called on the international community to step up its efforts before winter to avert a humanitarian catastrophe.
Today, I came to the bazaar to buy some food. As I checked the prices and the money in my pocket, I couldn't afford a sack of rice. I'm sure others are facing the same situation. We call on the Taliban and the international community to take steps towards fixing Afghanistan's worsening economy.
Here on a Kabul street, Afghans sell household items to escape poverty and keep food on the plate. These people say it's a matter of survival for them. They are also concerned about their future.
We are just trying to survive in this difficult economic situation. We are forced to sell our belongings and household items to put bread on the table. Some are selling second-hand items to pay their debt and bills, since they have been unemployed for months. I don't know what I will do in the coming month to make ends meet.
The Taliban deputy economy minister blamed the economic crisis on 2 decades of U.S. occupation and Washington sanctions on the war-ravaged country.
Today's deteriorating economic situation in our country is a legacy of the U.S. invasion, because the U.S. never let Afghan national economic bodies grow or become self-sufficient. All the U.S. did was to keep Afghanistan a consumer country and dependent on U.S. aid. Likewise, after the withdrawal, the U.S. seized Afghanistan's assets and cut international funding. As a result, the U.S. is to blame for Afghanistan's fragile economy.
In the meantime, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs has announced that 25 million people in Afghanistan are living in poverty, and 19 million people are facing food insecurity. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres arrived in Pakistan to see climate-induced devastation from months of deadly record floods that have left 500,000 people living in tents under the open sky and have left nearly 1,400 deaths. During his visit, the UN chief and Pakistan's Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif discussed the latest situation in the country. The two focused on joint efforts to carry out relief, rescue, and rehabilitation at the international level to mitigate the sufferings of the flood-affected people. Later, the visiting UN chief also met Pakistan's Foreign Minister Bilawal Bhutto Zardari and assured him of every support possible. The UN Secretary General, who has launched a global appeal to raise $160 million in flood assistance for Pakistan, says Pakistan is one of the countries most affected by climate change in recent months.
Developed countries must step up and provide Pakistan and other countries on the front lines with the financial and technical resources they need to survive extreme weather events like these deadly floods.
Bhutto said that his government is trying its best to help people who had lost everything in floods, but international help would be required to overcome the catastrophe.
I cannot shelter 33 million families. I cannot provide the food and clothing for 35 million families. We don't have the infrastructure in place. And this is just the rescue and relief phase.
The UN chief will travel to areas most impacted by the climate catastrophe. He will interact with the displaced families and oversee the UN's humanitarian response and relief efforts for millions of affected people.
As the floods continue to ravage Pakistan, UN agencies and several countries continue to send aid to flood-affected people in recent weeks. However, Pakistani authorities believe that more assistance is required to help millions of flood victims. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
The annual report from one of France's top NGOs revealed that poverty has already skyrocketed this year. And that's at what many say is only the beginning of years of inflation and recession provoked by sanctions on Russia over the unrest in Ukraine. Secours Populaire found that the number of people who say they have known poverty has increased 9% in just the past year. That's the biggest increase in 30 years. This year, over 40% of France says they can't pay their transport, medical, energy, or childcare bills, or go on vacation, or even buy fruits and vegetables. It's the highest percentage they've ever recorded.
The poverty question in France is one that's been central, but the social safety net is running out. It's just going to get worse and worse for the poor people because they're not going to be able to afford this stuff, you know? And the French are not going to be able to subsidize these cost of living increases the way they did.
The steep increase in poverty comes after a decade of failed austerity policies and a deep devaluing of the euro currency. The government just announced they expect the next two economic quarters to produce a growth rate of 0.2% and then 0%. Many predict that the essentially recession-level economy will soon begin massive layoffs. That combination spells stagflation, and it's something for which liberal economics has no theoretical remedy. This adds to the feeling of unease, especially among the investor class and high finance.
France has a pretty good record of having a